This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PlayStation Pop Experience. The end is here. We are closing out The Falcon and the Winter Soldier here on Pop Goes to the Couch with One World, One People, episode 6 of season 1. Will there be a season 2? I don't know. Maybe we'll speculate on that as we get to the end of this review. Hi there. This is Andy Atherton here, and let me get the crew in, and we're going to break it down, discuss, and give all of our theories and see what happens next in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the shows and everything else. So, first off, Sean Kidd is here, remarkably 2 episodes in a row. Wow.
Yeah, I believe that's a trend and a good run, 2 episodes in. It's great to be here. It's amazing to me that, you know, we went through all that with WandaVision, and now here we are in the final Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It went by so quick, so it's really exciting to kind of talk about this, but it seems like it went by so damn fast. But maybe it's because I missed, like, all of the episodes but 2.
I know, it seems like, what, you got... This was so fast for me. I only, 4 episodes, it was gone. Well, yep. We've been here for all 6, so it's okay. We'll get caught up. All right. So also here is Scott Shiflett. Hey, Scott.
Andy, glad to be here tonight with my boys as we close out another Marvel. I'm gonna say classic series.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed this. There were very few slow or down parts for me in this run. You know, we talked about it in the last episode, but I think for the most part it was pretty much full speed the entire time. Also, and rounding out the group is Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
Hey, guys. I might dispute that assertion a little bit, but we'll not get the cart ahead of the horse here.
All right, very good. So let's get into this episode and let's break it down, because, you know, this, a lot happens here, and it leads to a lot of stuff that, you know, people on this pod have hoped for, predicted. You know, this wasn't as many surprises as WandaVision, I guess, so to speak. But, you know, let's go. Carly meets up with her fellow Flag Smashers and tells them that the movement is ready and that they'll have to stop the GRC because it won't stop on its own. The NYPD secures the GRC building after the Flag Smashers have taken the GRC officials hostage as they were voting on the global resettlement. Winter Soldier walks through the crowd to the building while Falcon flies recon overhead. As Falcon tells his teammates that he's called in backup, Sharon steps out of the crowd wearing an electronic face mask and lets Winter Soldier know who she is. Falcon talks to her over the comms and thanks her for coming there and says that they're going to move on the building soon. Inside, Carly tells her comrades to do it now. One of them sets off a gas grenade and the council members run out. The masked Flag Smashers are waiting for them and Falcon throws the shield through the window and takes one of them out. He crashes in wearing his new Captain America uniform and checks in with Bucky and Sharon, who say that it's all quiet outside. Captain America figures Carly is trying to force everyone out, but he tells officials that they have to keep everyone inside just as Batroc attacks him. Most of the officials head out anyway down a stairwell as the Winter Soldier heads up. A waiting Flag Smasher gives him a phone and says that it's Carly. Winter Soldier takes the phone. I'm just going to say Bucky because I don't think we should call Winter Soldier anymore. And Carly says that she's fighting for something bigger than herself and it doesn't matter if she survives. Bucky isn't impressed and says that he tried to do the same thing and fell twice. Lennox, one of the Flag Smashers, is disguised as a guard and accompanies the officials out to the police vans in the underground parking garage. He plays electronic lock outside the doors. And once they're inside the van, and they're all inside the van, Sharon watches from behind a pillar. Captain America and Batroc continue fighting, and the two vans fly off. So, hits the ground running. We kind of, everything gets in motion. So, let's break it down. So, Sean, what do you think of the beginning of this episode?
I like the beginning a lot. Super hot open. Didn't waste time jumping right into it. And holy shit, the Falcon Captain America outfit was pretty much everything I hoped for. For those of you that don't know, I'm a pretty avid comic statue collector, and I do have that Falcon in the corner of my office that I'm looking up right now, and almost exactly to the T of what that costume was. I don't think we could have asked for a better Captain America Falcon costume that's true to the comics. So I love this whole opening. I love this whole sequence. Just super hot. Jump into the action. I was very critical on the last episode that I felt there were some slow moments with the whole ship and Sam's sister and all that. But I love that we just jumped right into it on the final episode.
All right. Scott, what are your thoughts?
Like Sean said, I enjoyed the start of it. One thing I did like was that we see something that we hadn't seen since Civil War with that face masking tech that Sharon uses. We haven't seen that since Natasha used it. I mean, not during Civil War, but Winter Soldier, my apologies. That hadn't been used since then, so that was a nice little callback. And I like how, you know, Batfrock and Sam just start going at it. That's who he said he was coming for. And, you know, I will say, I know we've given her a lot of shit, but this was actually a pretty good idea from Carly. Like, you thought it was going to be a kidnap there, but they're waiting for them till they move before they kidnap them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a diversion, and Batroc wanted, a piece of Falcon. Tim, what did you think of the beginning of this episode?
I thought it was a great debut for our new Captain America, just the way that he exploded onto the screen, and just awesome action sequence. The costume looks great. Looks like he just stepped right off the comics page. Mm-hmm. So I was super happy to see that. And he still has his wings. That was something we felt like there was a question hanging over. What's this new costume going to be like? How are they going to translate it again from the comics? Because he did have the wings there, and his wings got jacked up earlier in the series. So he has a new, spanking new set of, I guess, maybe vibranium wings. So good on the Wakandans for coming through on their promise to Bucky, even though he had the audacity to ask for another favor. So we have them. We are in the Wakandans' debt yet again. I mean, they provided the original shield. Now we've got all this tech. So very cool stuff. And just the chaotic nature of this scene, I would say I was pretty on board with also. As much as I don't really care about the Flag Smashers anymore and their motivations, their character, I'd like the way that they sort of staged this action scene and gets all our players in place, with one exception, right from hitting the ground running. And I did have to question, though. So Sharon is who they call in for backup. Like, of all people, I don't know, maybe you don't call Rhodey like he was in the first episode. And I'm not trying to be the, oh, where are the Avengers? Where's Spider-Man? Where's this person? Where's that person? It's just like, I get it. Like, that's just one of those things of superhero comics and movies and shows. Can't have everybody there all at once. But
it's a very valid point.
Yeah, that's of all people, Sharon, right? Like, that's the best.
That's why I didn't want this taking place in New York. Like,
because
that's like
Spider-Man's hood.
Yeah, and we also have the Avengers building there as well. So, I mean, well, never mind. The Avengers building is upstate New York.
I agree with Tim, like the Rhodey thing, since we've already seen him in the show. It made sense. I totally get what Tim's saying on that. It makes total sense.
I mean, I'd almost hope that I would almost prefer that they have no backup to call in. Like, no one's available other than, like, they purposely call Sharon, who is just, I mean, why would she even be willing to do this, really? It's just, unless she's the power broker and she's there because the show needs her to be there, right? It just felt sort of sloppy.
And she clearly got out of Madripoor quicker than I did. So.
Yeah, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, Sharon, there's this whole thing going down. You're, a whole ocean across the world. Can you be there in about 6 hours? Like,
yeah, it's like, oh, look, there's Sharon. Yesterday she's a Madripoor. Here she is, just for no context.
It's just, it's because the show needs her to be there, and they don't give a very good rationale for it.
Well, I also think we talked about it didn't make a whole lot of sense her being a Madripoor conveniently, but of course she needed to be there. She needed to be there. Yeah.
Based on what we're going to see, that's going to make sense too, which I guess I'm glad, but also, anyway.
Well, I'm not, because, anyway, we'll move on.
I'm glad that the show makes more, that it's less of a coincidence than the show presented it as originally.
Correct.
But anyway, not going to We're using more transportation metaphors already with putting carts in front of horses, and we've got new wings, and Sharon making these jaunts, these intercontinental jaunts.
Sean trains.
She traveled by map.
Yeah, the Sean train, of course.
Sean trains, yes.
All right.
All right, so the Winter Soldier tells Carly that the nightmares won't go away and she'll remember everyone that she's killed. He tells her not to go down the path, and Carly thanks him for taking her call and hangs up. He then goes to the parking garage and drives a motorcycle after the vans. Meanwhile, Sharon accidentally bumps into Lennox and puts a remote unit on him. As she walks on, Lennox gets into a van and drives off, driving past the police barricades. Bucky goes after the vans. The van Lennox is driving crashes as Sharon triggers the unit, releasing poisonous gas. She tells Captain America over the comms and goes outside and tells Captain America that the chopper with more of the officials is about to take off. He then fights his way past Batroc, flies out a window, and goes after the chopper. He grabs onto the side, and the pilot, Diego, shoots at Captain America, knocking him free. Captain America sends Red Wing ahead to scan for passengers, and the helicopter opens fire on the drone. Carly tells the Flag Smashers that they'll kill the hostages if necessary, even though they earlier agreed to keep them alive for negotiation to stop the vote. Carly figures that either way, their message gets out in the world. She said the Smashers' motto, one people, one world, and the others repeat it in support of her orders reluctantly. Diego flies the chopper low over the river, brushing a new NYPD chopper moving towards it to intercept. As the NYPD chopper spins out of control, Captain America pulls out the two cops out and gets them to safety on the bridge as the NYPD chopper crashes nearby. The crowd on the bridge cheers Captain America as he flies off after Diego's chopper. So, lots of stuff happened here. This was a great action sequence that's just beginning. The fact that their Red Wing is back was very happy. And I love the scene on the bridge. It was great. And just to see them, you know, embracing him. And it just gets even better as the episode goes on. Scott, what did you think?
Well, Sharon doesn't just incapacitate that guy. It eats away at his face. Yeah. So a little bit of a foreshadowing for what's to come, which I called, by the way. That was where I finally write. That's right. A little self-pat on the bat, like I'm Barry Horowitz. But
I was very happy for you, actually.
Oh, I was so wrong.
I was not because I'm an asshole.
It's not really what I wanted.
I still have some points to make on that as we get towards. All
right.
But yes, but I enjoyed the fight sequence with Batroc, because like we had that in episode one. It's nice full circle, and also Cap actually fought him as well, so it's nice to see, you know, he's taking it to full two different versions of Cap. Carly, I just want to be done with her, because I've kind of had enough. Like, you know, I was out of the four of us, I think I was the one like most supportive of her, but she's ran out of rope with me. I just want her to be done with. And I do like that we have his Red Wing back, so that's nice to see as well.
All right, Tim?
Yeah, so this is a rescue sequence that reminded me quite a bit of one of the better scenes in Iron Man 3. Remember the Air Force One barrel monkeys scene, this was not quite as elaborate as that, but sort of the same idea, where there's just a lot of moving parts, really, really tense, but a fist pumping moment when our hero saves the day. So that was cool to see. Red Wing being back, also great. Is this where we get the twin Red Wings, in fact?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's not just one. He's got a couple of those, and even more tricks up his sleeve, as we're going to see as this thing goes on. Sharon melting the guy's head with mercury oxide or whatever it was is, again, just another one of those reminders. That's not really a very heroic way of dispatching someone, is it?
Like, no.
He is a bad guy, but we're not seeing Bucky or Sam melting people's faces. No. She kind of didn't have to do that, but I mean, it's a neat visual, I'll give it that. But yeah, just more another reminder. And they haven't totally tipped their hand yet. But when they do, let's just say, Scott, I was very happy and proud of you for sticking to your guns.
Thank you.
All right, Sean.
So I was not happy. Scott was correct. I guess I am. I mean, after all the bullshit theories and everything we did on WandaVision, I like, and here's where I got caught up in this trope again. Like, there's no way that they're just going to be that obvious about it. And lo and behold, they were, and Scott was right. So maybe I'm more pissed at myself that they fooled me again by being too obvious. So that's probably more about me than you, Scott, to be perfectly clear. Though nothing more to add about these scenes. The two red rings was great. I love, I mean, just for clarity, and they're all these scenes, I feel like they did no wrong in the Falcon and Captain America dynamics and the action scenes with him, because they made him shine. And I thought for a TV, and I know it's Marvel, but for a made-for-TV show, I just thought all this shit was fantastic and looked great. So yeah, not as great as Iron Man 3, which, by the way, is a terrible movie.
Oh, I don't love the movie either, yeah. But I do enjoy that scene.
That's a great scene, and they're not going to compete with that probably on this budget, but I still thought for a TV standpoint it was amazing. So I'm in on, so far so good for me on this episode.
Yeah, they were like, just when you know all the answers, we're going to keep the questions the
same. I was more frustrated with myself than anything else, because I got caught in that trope again, motherfucker. Anyway,
like a high-stakes poker game with Marvel Studios right now.
Correct.
All right. So Carly and her smashers put up barricades in front of the vans, which stop. They then rip open the cab doors and throw out the police inside. They get into them and drive off with the hostages. Bucky crashes over a barricade from the other side and takes on the flag smashers. Carly tells her comrades that they need to give Bucky someone to rescue. So one of them pours gasoline on the van and lights it up. As Bucky tries to get to the back door of the burning van open, Walker arrives with his force shield and tells Carly that it's time to finish it. She says she didn't mean Lamar to kill Lamar because she didn't want to kill people that whose lives don't matter. And Walker asks her if she didn't think Lamar's life mattered. Walker then throws his shield at her, which she deflects. The smashers attack Walker, which while Bucky beats on one of the electronic locks trying to break it open, he finally weakens it enough to yank the door open and gets the officials out. The smashers beat Walker down and he protects himself with his shield as one grabs a parking mirror to beat him up. Bucky tackles the smasher and knocks him away. As the man comes back for more, one of the smashers grabs the parking mirror and swings it at Bucky. He smashes Bucky into the nearby construction site and swings at him, and Bucky blocks the blow with his bionic arm. All right. So, you know, now we get a another variable into this already crazy scene. Tim, what'd you think of Walker showing up and Bucky getting into the action with his flinging himself basically at these people?
Yeah, fine time for Walker to make his appearance, which we knew was inevitable. That shield, that homemade shield, comes into play, and as predicted, it isn't the most impressive in the world. Just gets swatted down, which I kind of marked out for. It's exactly what I was hoping to see. The problem, though, with just the way they've set up this rivalry between Walker and Carly is, I mean, as much as Walker is just this unhinged asshole, I found myself more rooting for him just because I just so dislike her. And as we've been over ad nauseum, especially just the way she talks about Lamar, his life doesn't matter. Like, it almost just feels like they're going out of their way to paint her as completely unsympathetic here. And when you do that, I kind of don't care what the character's message is. If they are that unlikable, you're not going to hear what they're saying. And so I'm just, that sort of kind of just washed over me, where I'm like, all right, I know I'm not supposed to be rooting for him, but I really, really hate her. And, I'm sort of hoping we'd go ahead and wrap this up quick, as we talked about last episode, and get rid of these flag smashers, completely dispense with them. Bucky gets a cool scene on the motorcycle, of course. I'm glad, Andy, you've made the editorial decision to refer to him as Bucky and not the Winter Soldier now, by the way. Thank you. I applaud you for that.
I'm trying.
And, he gets his licks in also. So I think this finale is doing a decent job of sort of juggling its various characters. I think there is a real risk of we even talked about and had the criticism that maybe there are too many characters in this show. Real risk going into this, especially with Sam stepping up now as Captain America. Is Bucky just going to take a backseat to him? And even though he's one of the titular characters, like, is he just going to feel like a hanger-on, a sidekick? And he's being well serviced so far, I think, through this episode.
All right, Sean.
Yeah, not much more to add what Tim said. And for fact, I obviously Walker, I made fun of him on the last episode for his great value shield he was making, and it was good to see that it did turn out to be a great value shield. But it's also interesting, like Tim said, I probably shit on Carly probably as much as anybody on this show, making fun of her looks, one, which is not right. I just don't like her character. And I was very critical of Falcon wanting to, like, sympathize with her and be empathetic with her. But to Tim's point, there's nothing to like about this woman. She shits on Lamar a little bit, says his life doesn't matter. Then on top of that, you know, she's, oh, we're just going to kill the hostages if we have to. There's zero redeeming her at this point. Now it's kind of switched to me where, you know what? I want Walker to take this bitch out because of what she did to Lamar. And by the way, I wanted to take her out, want him to take her out because she deserves it. She's probably one of the most unlikable characters that I'm supposed to sympathize with that I've ever seen in any Marvel property. So, yeah, I'm kind of with Tim on the same things Tim said.
Mm-hmm. Scott, sorry.
Yeah, I was, you know, Walker showing up, you know, we kind of figured that was coming. It was a nice little battle. And like Tim said, that new shield gets, you know, shown that it's a piece of shit from the jump. But, you know, with Carly, she lost any sympathy I had when she did the bombing. That me and Tim talked about a lot a couple episodes ago. That's where she lost me, as like feeling anything but like, nah, you can go to hell, bitch. So yeah, but it was nice to see, like, you know, one of the big things that happened last episode was that nice talk with Bucky and Sam, when they were saying, like, you know, you need to stop doing things for you. You need to stop doing things to make you feel better, but do things to make other people feel better. And you see when he saves those people, they actually said, thank you, you're a hero. And, like, you see it, like, before he goes back to the attack, like, it washes over. And, like, yeah, I finally did something good for, like, other people and not to assuage my own conscience.
Great point.
Yep. All right. So Captain America and Diego continue to spar airily. Diego shooting when one of the passengers at him, and then one of the passengers gets a text telling her to put in her earbuds. So that what happens there? Sorry, the person who wrote the synopsis. They do a scan of the chopper of all the passengers. They find out one of them has, I guess, was in the military and can fly a helicopter. So that, you know, she gets. She gets a text telling her to put her earbuds in. When she does, Captain America says they learned from his earlier scan that she can fly a chopper. Captain blocks the blades with his shield, and the impact knocks him into a building on the shore. He flies out of the water and up and tells the passengers to grab control on the count of five. On the five count, Captain America slams into the cockpit windshield with his shield, grabs Diego, and flies away. The official grabs controls from him and brings the chopper under control, while Captain America drops Diego in the river below. The hero then flies up to the chopper. So we'll pause there. So I know it's a short thing, but Sean, this was a great scene. And this was, like, kind of intense because and I also love the person that they picked to handle the chopper. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought this is a fantastic scene. And again, like I said, I've been loving the Falcon stuff in this. And this is one right here where they timed it just right to where he took out Diego. At the same time, she grabbed it and took control of it. This was a fantastic, and to your point, short, but this was exactly what I wanted out of this finale, and this is a fantastic scene to put in, and I loved every single thing about it. Everything.
Scott?
Yeah, it is, like, so going back, like, this part, like, up to this part in the episode, they're making this to make the new, I'm gonna stop calling him Falcon, he's now Cap. So they're making Cap look like a badass, like, from when he saves the people on the bridge, and, like, he basically, like, the shield around them goes around them to save them when it blows up, to this where he throws the shield to take out, you know, the pilot, and, like, he just kicks him off and, like, you know, is able to save all these people. He's just looking like a badass and looking like like a superhero. Like, this ain't the same hero that got jobbed out to Ant-Man in Ant-Man. So this is someone completely different. We've seen character growth in, what, 7 or 8 years?
Yep, exactly. Tim, what do you think?
Not much more to add on this. This is actually what I was referring to when I said that it reminded me of the rescue scene in Iron Man 3, specifically this sequence with the kind of enlisting one of the hostages slash passengers to pilot the helicopter, getting their timing exactly right, supernaturally right, you may say, and just super putting Sam over as the new Cap. He may be lacking the super soldier serum. He may not have the superhuman abilities that Steve had, but every bit still the hero and just as capable.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the Smashers prepare to attack Walker again. He manages to beat two of them down with his shield, and Carly runs over to attack as one goes to the other van. She and Walker fight, and she manages to stun Walker, runs over, pushes a barricade aside, and drives off with the van. Carly leaps out of it, and it goes into a construction site, stopping on some supports a dozen yards above the ground. Walker runs over as the van starts to fall. He clutches at his head as he sees Carly nearby. He then tosses his bent shield down to Bucky and grabs the back of the van to hold it in place. As Walker pulls it back up, Carly and the remaining Flag Smashers jump on him and knock him into the pit below. The van starts to fall, but Captain America arrives, grabs it by the front, and pushes up with his red wings and his jetpack. As Captain America pushes it up back to the street, the bystanders cheer him as Captain America. Carly throws a rebar at Walker, and Bucky blocks it. Captain America arrives and throws a shield, knocking out Carly's comrades. She removes her mask and says that Captain America is brought into the bullshit, and he tells her he's trying something different, and she should try the same. So, Scott, what did you think of this sequence here?
Now, I know he was supposed to be, you know, he's more of a tweener than anything. But this is where you see that Walker, at the end of the day, yes, he may want to win, but he wants to save people. And is it, and, you know, it's feeling a little Suicide Squad-y with me, where you're not supposed to cheer for him, but they are supposed to be good guys as well, which I guess I've never read Thunderbolts, but I guess that's sort of what they're supposed to be. And you see him doing, like, you know, he goes out, he has a super soldier, and he's supposed to save him, but, like, it was just a superhero moment for this, but it's also like an allegory for the series as a whole, where, like, Walker thinks he's going to be the hero, but then it's still Sam at the end of the day that saves everyone. So, and I was waiting for Carly just to get either her ass whooped or thrown in jail or thrown off the Brooklyn Bridge. So I'm done with her.
All right, Tim.
Okay. So what do we think of Walker's redemption just in terms of that as a moment itself? Is it really, does it really feel true to his character is the question.
I had something to say about that too. It seems like out of the blue, we're supposed to forgive him for everything. And here he is back being a hero and all's forgiven. I didn't like it at all.
It's also something that it's one of those moments where you kind of almost feel like you can see the gears turning behind the scenes a little bit, where this is happening not because it's a logical extension of his character arc necessarily. It's happening because we need him to still be in play for their version of the Suicide Squad or whatever the hell they're going to do, which we've already talked about how we hope it's something other than that. But obviously, he's still going to be a player who's on the board. And on the one hand, I can respect that because I've enjoyed the performance a great deal that Wyatt Russell has put in. I mean, from what I understand, just it like from interviews he's given, he really went in completely blind for this character, but seems to have such great instincts for it that I can't imagine better casting here. So I guess I'll kind of look forward to seeing him again, but I'm also like, I don't know, it's kind of a cop out to have him like decide to make this face turn at the 11th hour, like it, where he was just so hell bent on revenge, and they did a very good job of justifying how he got to that headspace and to be like, oh, okay, I got to save people. we've already got enough like true blue heroes in this. So I guess I'm just torn on that. But it didn't seem like the most organic bit of writing or plotting there, which is, I don't know. I guess I'll leave it at that. Because Sean, I think you sounds like you have something to add on that point.
It's not really got to add. Here's the thing. I also think like he killed someone like right in the middle with all these people on camera and everything, and I feel like they rushed through that. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, here they are, redemption time. And after the last episode, I wasn't real sure there was going to be a redemption. And here it is. It's like out of the blue. And then, you know, it's like we're supposed to forgive and forget. And I think part of that is because maybe we're supposed to hate Carly so much. Maybe we oversee the fact that Walker's not like this great hero either. I will also agree with you, Juan, though. I know I shit all over how I thought he looked in the first episode when he came out as Captain America. And that wasn't fair of me. I will say I'm with you. I think Wyatt Russell has done a really good job with his characters. I think his mannerisms, his acting. As someone that's a fan of the comics, I think he's done a great job being what's going to be what we see here in the end, what he officially becomes. But, yeah, the whole redemption thing with him is weird. It just seems fast and too quick. And I like that it's only six episodes, but there's things where I think that they went really slow and slow parts, and I feel like there's things they're rushing, and this John Walker thing, I feel rushed. I feel like it's rushed.
Yeah, maybe it'd be cool to see if he's going to stick around, maybe see him as more of a loose cannon.
Yeah.
Before he gets like an outright hero moment. And I apologize if I called him Russell Wyatt. I don't know. Sometimes after this many Ativan, the words get turned around.
Wyatt Russell, Russell Wyatt.
Russell Wyatt, Wyatt Russell.
Yeah, it's all good.
Cool. All right, so Batroc arrives and fires smoke grenades down into the pit, and Carly and her comrades escape in the smoke. Captain America picks up the infrared signatures on his goggles and leads Bucky and Walker after them. Carly enters an access tunnel, and three men follow her, appraising Sharon of the location via comms. The Smashers split up, and Bucky and Walker follow one trail while Captain America goes on the other. Walker and Bucky lose the trail and double back. Carly hears someone whistling and goes back and looking for Dovish and the others. Sharon steps out, aims a gun at Carly, and tells her to drop her weapon. Carly aims her gun at Sharon, and they both say that they're disappointed in the other. Sharon lowers her gun first, and Carly does likewise. The ex-agent says that when Carly came to Madripoor, she reminded her of a young her, and that she took Carly in and gave her an opportunity, and then she betrayed her. Carly insists that she wanted to change the world, while Sharon wanted to control it. Carly figures that Sharon just wants her back, so as the power broker, Sharon can have serum-enhanced soldiers. Batroc comes in and realizes Sharon is power broker. Carly realizes that Sharon hired Batroc to spy on her, and Batroc aims his gun at Carly, and then tells Sharon that she'll pay him four times what she promised, or he'll tell the whole world who she is. Sharon shoots him, and Carly shoots Sharon. Captain America hears the gunshots, follows him. Cap arrives, and Carly tells him to stay back. He asks, where does the killing end? And asks her to let him help her. When she refuses, Captain America tackles her, and she fights back. She says that he doesn't want to hurt her and reacts defensively, and Carly smashes down with a pipe and tells him to stay down. Captain America gets up and says that he won't. So we get the big reveal here. So who's up? I believe Tim is up. So what'd you think here of, you know, the whole realization? And after everybody goes, I'm going to put my two cents in.
Okay.
I'm being worse than Sean. I'm not giving Scott this win.
I tell you, it's burning my ass.
All right. So we get the big it's kind of a big non-reveal, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't make a big to-do about this, the fact that Sharon is this enigmatic, mysterious power broker we've been hearing so much about. It's not like somebody unmasks her or anything. It's not a Scooby-Doo moment or anything along those lines. They just sort of quietly agree that that's who she is. And, yep, if you're playing along at home, you guessed right. Good on you. But I wonder if the reason for that is if we're going to get a bigger reveal somewhere down the line again.
Oh, Tim, I'm afraid to go down that rabbit hole. I agree with you. I floated
the Skrull theory.
Yes.
I think in our last episode. I don't know if I'm married to that one yet, but it would feel sort of forced to make a big to-do about the fact that she's the power broker and then be like, oh, it's a double secret reveal. She's also a Skrull, so we're going to not do both of those in the same episode. And also not make that big a deal about the power broker thing, because it isn't that important in the grand scheme of this show. I don't know that I love that direction for the character for Sharon Carter, but I do like it just because it does make sense out of some of the more nonsensical elements of the plot earlier in this series, where that third episode was kind of a pile of shit because of Sharon's presence being as convenient and as coincidental as it was. Well, now we know that it isn't, and that everything that happened there was very much by design, largely by her design. And I'm like, okay, I can work with that now. And I'm glad that the Power Broker also was not yet another new character, an unseen player that they're adding to the board here in the last episode of this series. So all in all, I would say they pull it off. It's a very strange choice to go about it the way that they do. But I don't really fault them for it. And I guess that's all I'll say on that point for now.
Okay. Sean, you're up.
This is another thing where I felt like they rushed through some story that we could have heard. And I read an article. I might have shared it with you guys. And I guess maybe I feel like they could have told more of a backstory about the relationship between Sharon and Carly. It's clear they knew each other. It's clear Sharon had a big part in Carly's life. And one of the articles I read is that because of COVID, stuff was cut out where they show obviously Carly has a super soldier serum, but basically it was around, you know, she didn't learn how to fight or any of that nature. And there's a thing out there that Sharon's the one that taught her how to actually fight, which totally makes sense. So I probably would have liked to see more backstory on that versus just, oh, well, you know, when you came to me, blah, blah, blah. And it kind of sets up that they know each other. As far as Sharon being the power broker, here's the out. Tim gave me the out on this. I don't know if Scott is necessarily right. This version is the power broker, but if it does turn out to be what I perceive will be, like Tim perhaps brought up, it's not really Sharon Carter as the power broker, so then I don't have to give Scott credit for shit. That's kind of where
right?
I'm at. So
we both be right? Come on.
So I'll let it play out. The reason why, and I'm not going to speculate, the reason why I think the Skrull is a possibility, one, this is very out of character for Sharon, and two, we know a secret invasion show is coming with Nick Fury and Sharon Carter. She used to be in S.H.I.E.L.D., and I don't know. I'm holding out hope that, again, like Tim said, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. She's a power broker. But I think there's more narrative to this story that's going to play out than what's so obvious. Marvel's not one for the obvious. And this would shock me if this is really like the obvious thing with Sharon. And I'll leave it at that.
All right, Scott.
I was right. I just want to say it right now.
You are not 100%. You might have won the battle. The war is not over.
I'll take this battle because I lost a lot of battles in WandaVision. So let me just have this one.
Did we all? Thank you.
But like, I did love that this scene where the Power Broker reveal that Cap isn't there. So he comes in and he just sees Sharon shot and he thinks Carly did it to try to get, like, he doesn't know the whole conversation, and I don't think he even finds out the whole conversation, or no, he doesn't. So it's like, oh, well, like, you know, it's just like the nick of time right there. And I did like the Carly and Cap fight where it shows, like, you know, how cool the his new suit is, because like when he gets hit by the power broker by Carly and he's holding the shield, you see like his wings dig into the ground to holding still, which I thought was pretty badass. Yeah. I'm a little upset that Backrock, it looks like he's gone because, like, you know, he actually was a villain. He was a nice, like, B or C villain that had stuck around for, you know, like I said, since I think Civil War, maybe before that. Winter Soldier, actually. Winter Soldier. So he'd been around a while as well. And, you know, they finally just got rid of him. But, you know, I like having, like, a little B and C list of villains. But I'm enjoying the ride so far.
Now, all right, so... So first of all, it's too small a moment for them to make. This power broker has been lurking in the background for them to do it in a little conversation. She never says she is. Carly says it and Batroc says it. I don't think she ever says she's the power broker. So I think that either she is a decoy or a Skrull. Also, in fact, I did watch one of those, you know, all the Easter eggs, all the things you missed. And Sharon Carter, I believe, was listed as missing in Endgame. So she could have been blipped. And if she was blipped, do you think she could have become the power broker in that short period of time? I don't think so. So that's all I have to say about that. All right. So where was I?
Do you think there's some wiggle room in other words?
I think it's not as obvious as
I agree. No matter what theory or whatever you want to throw out there, I don't think it's as obvious as it seems, because I would be shocked if it is.
It's a ploy, as Sonny Ono used to say. All right, so Dovish and the other two remaining Smashers follow the app and finds Walker, I'm not calling him Winter Soldier, Bucky, and the police find them, police waiting for them. Bucky reveals that he used the app to lure them into a trap. Captain America continues defending himself from Carly's attacks, and she yells at him to fight back. Carly knocks him down and picks up her gun and aims it at Captain America. As she hesitates, Sharon gets up and shoots Carly. Captain America goes to the dying Carly, who says with a dying breath that she's sorry, carrying Carly's body out of the tunnels. Captain America then flies to her to where the officials and bystanders are. The EMTs take Carly's body as Bucky and Walker arrive. The officials thank Captain America and say that they're going to soon start relocating people. Captain America says that labels like terrorist are often used to get around the question. When one official says that Captain America doesn't understand the complexity of the relocation, he tells them that they have to step it up and use the power they have to help everyone. Isaiah and his grandson watch the newscast of Captain America at home. Isaiah nods in agreement as Cap says that he's a black man and doesn't have any superpowers except that he believes they can do better. Captain America tells them that they have to do better or the next Carly will and her people will defy the strongest governments in the world. So this is a very powerful moment here. Once Sam comes here and really speaks his mind to the officials and makes so many great points and really just wins over the crowd and any doubters out there. So, Sean, what did you think?
So first off, let's all celebrate the death of Carly, because that's really what really matters here. We'll celebrate the death of great value Opie. And I really like that it was – I like that it was Sharon that did it, because, again, it adds another element to her character. And as much as I'll shit on that I don't really think it is Sharon, I don't care if it is or not, because whoever killed Carly is okay in my book, because I could not stand that character, worst character in this entire show. And then Falcon flying her back, nice visual. I think his speech, I'll say Captain America now, his speech was amazing. Isaiah being there and watching it on, just seeing all that. I think this episode... I will tell you, this episode did so much for Sam being a new Captain America. And, like, it's like, who is Steve Rogers to me? Like, for me, he is taking up the mantle. He is Captain America. And this whole episode just shined for him. And that speech that he gave was absolutely amazing. He did a fantastic. Like, that was an Emmy-worthy speech from Emmy-worthy speech for Captain America in my book.
I mean, I don't know if I vote in that category, but I will if I can. I'm voting Anthony Mackie next year.
He won't get nominated, but I think he was very, very good in this episode. Like, I thought he was outstanding.
All right. Scott?
So I was laughing because me and Sean, in another podcast that we do, we make fun of, like, the Emmy-winning speeches that these characters tried doing, Battlestar and Buck Rogers.
Well, it's mainly for overacting, and we make fun of it. I'm not doing it in this
context. Sean was being serious with that, but it just made me laugh. So that's what I was laughing in the middle of it. But no, this was great. I'm happy that, you know, Carly finally bit the bullet, so to speak. And then, you know, I really enjoyed Cap's speech because, you know, he brought up good points that, you know, like, we've alluded to this whole show has like touched on like cultural problems that we see in everyday life. And, you know, this one is just the same because like he brings up like, you know, what do you think these people are going to call you? And like, you know, some people just see it like, you know, with the terrorist, refugee and thug, like, you know, we see that all the time sprayed across all types of news programming, whichever side you're on. But, you know, I'm glad that, you know, cause before like, OG Cap would have been like, I'm just America, you know, but, you know, Sam is like, there's people that don't want me to be Captain America, but I am. And hopefully he wins those people over because he's won me over. He's deserved that shield ever since it was given to him, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tim, what are your thoughts?
It is a very Cap-like speech that I thought. Almost a, took me back to like, geez, the Captain America of like the 80s. It sounded like a Mark Gruenwald written speech, prolific Captain America writer, and very much wrote Cap as like this, I don't want to say like bleeding heart do-gooder, but he really was, in a way that he really like pulled it off, and made Captain America like Marvel's Superman, basically, just without the incredible powers, which in many respects makes him kind of more of a hero in my eyes, but that's another argument. That's my Cap love speaking. But carries a lot more impact coming from Sam for kind of the obvious reasons that he is very blunt about in this speech. He does not beat around the bush at all. And, props for this show for just, again, being willing to engage with these issues of race and identity and politics, even, although that one was not quite as deftly handled, we'll say. But I love that we get to see Isaiah's reaction also, and we don't lose Isaiah from this narrative, because he has been such an influence and how Sam has carried the Captain America mantle forward. And I love the coda to this episode also that we get between the two of them, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I do kind of wish that, you know, just the backdrop to this whole speech, that being, you know, Carly's legacy and almost her martyrdom in a way, had just been built on a stronger foundation, as we've talked about. You know, there's that fan theory. I don't even know if it's a fan theory so much as fan fiction that I brought up in an earlier installment of how maybe this was, there was like a pandemic subplot written into this, and that the long and short of it was, that the GRC was much more villainized when that was a part of this series, if that was ever a part of the series, because they're hoarding resources and deprioritizing marginalized populations, which Carly would have been one of, and just taking vulnerable people who had access to things during this 5-year period of global depopulation, and now saying, oh, you're now, you know, a lower class of citizen, just like you were before all this started. And had that been a part of the show and a part of her motivations and just had a stronger emphasis, whether it's because of a pandemic or anything else, I mean, the reason for it doesn't really matter. If they had just made better strides, to show us that, to illustrate it, I don't think we would be having these complaints about her character and her motivations and just why the Flag Smashers are such the weak link in this show, and it's not there. And it just feels like a real missed opportunity. I also kind of question if, and it took me really until this episode to get there. And you guys tell me if I'm going way too far out on a limb. If they're almost setting up like an Israeli-Palestine metaphor with the idea of the Flag Smashers as not just as refugees, but as people who, again, during the blip, and I hate that term blip, but they came to inhabit, you know, property and homes and communities, and started, you know, building this life for themselves that they didn't have before. And then all of a sudden, you know, half the world reappears, and basically half the world who has been through this tremendous trauma and is saying, we want our shit back, kind of justifiably so, and is now like kicking them out. And just, there's definitely a parallel there. And it's something that I think the show was maybe less willing to engage with than the issues of race, or at least not wanting to do both at the same time, because that's a lot for any series, especially for a superhero property. But to treat that as more of a metaphor, I think can run the risk of trivializing the issue, whereas they were very directly speaking to questions of race and in a way that I thought was pretty effective. I thought maybe they were walking a bit more of a tightrope with the politics of, you know, the Flag Smashers and what are they really, what are the real world analogs. Maybe it was there, but they were just more cagey about it. I don't know. But it made for kind of some ropey, kind of some sloppier writing, that I wished we hadn't gotten here. But at the end of the day, we get a good speech out of it. And I do just kind of applaud this series for having the ambitions to be more than just a slam bam buddy cop action show, which it could have gotten away with. Like, if that's all its aspirations really were, I think we'd be sitting here saying, yep, that was cool. On to the next thing. But it wanted to be more than that. And, even though it wasn't entirely 100% graceful in its execution, I still think that's worth commending.
All right. So as they walk away, Bucky calls Sam Cap and congratulates him on a good job. They find Sharon nursing her wound, and she refuses to go to the hospital. Bucky leads Sharon away, and a Secret Service agent asks Captain America if they can help with Diego. Captain America says that he's always available to help and flies off. The military transport that captured the Flag Smashers head to the raft, and one soldier recites the Smashers' motto to Dovish before locking him and the others up in the back of the transport van. As they drive off, Zemo's aide in his car triggers an explosive charge on the van. At the raft, Zemo listens to the radio newscast about the death of the Flag Smashers and how the GRC has changed their resettlement plans. Val meets with Walker and his wife and gets word of the Smasher's death. She figures Zemo or one of his people was involved, and Walker joins him wearing his new black toned costume. Val tells him that things are going to get weird, and when they do, they're going to need a U.S. agent, not a Captain America. With that, she tells Walker to wait for their call. So you get the big reveal here, and the final, I guess, not nail in the coffin, but you know what I mean, the final explosion to do in the Flag Smashers. So, Scott, what do you think of this part?
I was shocked with the Flag Smashers being blown up. I love that we see, I was not expecting to see JLD, Madam Hydra, show up again. So that was a nice little surprise. I thought she was going to be one and done. So seeing her show up, and, you know, she actually plants the seeds of doubts that she was in on it. So maybe she's working with Baron too, because we don't know if she works for the government or not. I know she called Walker U.S. agent, but like, we still don't, you know, it's purposely in the dark. So I did like that. I did like, you know, Captain America saying, yep, I'm going to go take out this person now, showing that, you know, he's committed to like not saying like, oh, I'm going to go eat, you know, some hot dogs or something. I'll be right back. But no, he's like, nope, got to go take out this other guy. So I'm interested to see where everything goes.
All right, Tim.
Cool U.S. agent reveal in that costume, looking mighty fine. That's definitely as goofy as he looked during his big debut as Cap, which I think was totally by design, right? Here he's looking sleek. And what's next for Mr. Walker? And is Val in on this, I don't know what to call it, the fate of the Flag Smashers getting blown up by Chancellor Arnold, acting, I guess, on behalf of Zemo? But how many strings can Zemo reasonably be pulling from the raft? So still some unanswered questions here. But I guess I'm kind of glad they're off the board at the end of the day. Clean slate. And just want to see what's next with Julie Louis-Dreyfus and whatever team it is she's putting together. And what are they going to be called? And is Blob going to be on it, obviously?
It is Freedom Force. Yeah, it's a good Blob.
All right, Sean.
Yeah, the U.S. agent reveal was cool. And again, staying true to the costume. So I do like that this show has stayed really relatively true to some of the comic stuff, which I really do like that a lot. Obviously, the Flag Smashers thing I loved as well, with Zemo kind of, you know, being behind that. I definitely think that we are going to see all these characters again. And it's a good question is if Julie Louis-Dreyfus was involved with Zemo in some form or fashion with that, because it seemed awfully convenient that the Flag Smashers are dead. Now we have U.S. Agent, and, you know, things are about to... I mean, she made a lot of kind of, like, hidden messaging around things are about to happen. So I'm with Tim. It'll be interesting to see what group, what direction they go with it. I did one thing I did read that I didn't even think about, because we've talked about Freedom Force and all these other ones. We did not talk about... did we talk about the Dark Avengers at all?
No. A little. I think we did a little.
I'm leaning more towards Dark Avengers at this point, I think, just because, yeah, one, we're in the Avengers universe, and I think people would relate to the name itself probably. So who knows? I don't want to speculate, but there's so many different groups, like Thunderbolts, Dark Avengers, Freedom Force. Who knows where the hell they're going?
The thing of it is, it would make more sense for her to be putting together her own team of Avengers.
Yeah.
And they'll just be called, marketing wise, I guess they'll be referred to as Dark Avengers. But yeah, within the show, it's not like she's going to go, meet my new team, the Dark Avengers.
Correct. Yeah. It's kind of like that cartoon Justice League Dark. You know, they're not going to call them Dark Avengers.
They're not going to call them that, yeah, but everybody's going to know.
For comic geeks like us and Tim, me and Tim, it's going to be like, oh, that's the Dark Avengers.
And perhaps that, yeah, this sets up competing teams of Avengers or something.
Yeah, maybe. So who knows? I hopefully it's something like that. Maybe it's a combination of Thunderbolts, Dark Avengers, and Freedom Force. I still want Blob in my Dark Avengers. And I want my old three old guys that were Freedom Force too. Crimson Tide, all those guys. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. I was happy the Flag Smashers had a good ending to it, and the U.S. agent reveal was nice. I liked it.
All right, so Bucky goes to Yuri's apartment and tells Yuri his son was murdered by the Winter Soldier, and that was him, Bucky. Yuri wonders why. Bucky says he didn't have a choice. They look over at Yuri's shrine to his son, and then he leaves. Rainer arrives at her office and finds a present. It's Bucky's book with all the names crossed off. There's a card from Bucky saying that he finished the book and thanks her for her help. Bucky looks into the bar and sees Leah. He nods to her and walks off. Sam goes to Isaiah's house and finds him working in his backyard. Isaiah figures that Sam did something right because the GRC is backing down on their plans and admits that Sam is special. Sam says that he knows what he has to do, and Isaiah tells him that the fight he's taking on won't be easy. In response, Sam tells him that he might die, but he's not going to let anyone tell him he can't fight for it after what all the blacks before him had went through, including Isaiah. Isaiah half-jokingly says that he almost bought it, and Sam tells him to clean up because there's something he wants to show him. Sam takes Isaiah and his grandson Eli to the Steve Rogers exhibit and the new statue of Isaiah. He tells Isaiah that now they'll never forget what Isaiah did for the country, and Isaiah hugs him. in Louisiana. The Wilsons and their neighbors and Bucky celebrate the opening of the Wilsons' new dockside seafood restaurant. Later, Sam looks out to sea and Bucky joins them. They smile and after a moment go back to the party. So this scene at the Cap exhibit when Isaiah sees a statue, I brought a tear to my eye. I mean, I welled up because it was so powerful. And then just the emotion that the actor playing Isaiah just showed. Oh, it was so beautiful. Tim, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And it kind of made me want to reread the Isaiah's introduction from the comics, that miniseries Truth from like 2003. It's hard to imagine. And to think, like, it was so controversial for its time, but look what it's given us. Just been a great contribution to the lore. It's always tough doing like retcons, especially for major like iconic characters dating back to their early history, but that's one that is so enriching, adds so much, and makes a lot of sense when you really stop and think about this is how things realistically would have played out, as unfortunate and tragic as they ended up being for this man, Isaiah Bradley. But just to see the amount of respect he's given in this episode, and the reveal of the memorial is the monument is really great. And I just want to see what else is to come with him. It seems like a setup, more setup maybe for kind of seeding this world with young Avengers characters. His grandson, Eli, is a founding member of that team. So maybe we'll be seeing more of both of them. I would certainly welcome that down the line. Bucky, now not just free from his programming, but kind of unburdened as well, mm-hmm. from a lot of his guilt, and having made amends, finished the damn book, sets it down, truly with a clean slate here. And I like the scene that we're going to get at the end also, just with him and Sam's family. So yeah, they in a lot of ways they sort of tie a bow on all this, but I'm okay with it, more than okay with it.
All right, Sean, what do you think of the end of the episode proper?
I'm with Tim. I thought they did a nice little like with WandaVision. It's kind of like they left a lot of things open because we didn't see White Vision come back, and in the end they had the Skrull reveal. So there's a lot of kind of like dangling threads of where it was going to go with the after scene. So we do have an after scene here, but I think that this after scene more or less is kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But I loved Bucky's redemption in the end, like going full circle from episode one to the final episode. That was a nice little tie up. The Isaiah stuff, like you guys said, was really just great TV and just a great moment. And you can feel the emotion in that scene, which is really, really great. Again, this is an Emmy worthy episode, and I don't care what anybody says. And then I did like it with Sam and Bucky with the family, and I believe this is the end where you see like his nephews hanging on Bucky's arm, and I think there's an innuendo that maybe him and Bucky's sister have hooked up, but they didn't really kind of go that route. But I thought this tied up everything really, really well. I was really satisfied with the ending of this.
All right, Scott.
Yeah, just echoing what these guys said, but like I will say, you know, Bucky going and apologizing with the guy was heartbreaking in its own. And then a couple minutes later, we have, like you agree, like you said, Andy, like a heartbreaking scene. And like Tim and Sean alluded to it with, like, you know, we see an Isaiah finally getting his due, you know, and it's just heartbreaking. Like, I don't know who the actor is for Isaiah, but my God, every scene he was in, the man dominated the scenery. It was just amazing. Like, you felt from every episode the heartbreak and anguish in him, and now you see like the relief and like the tears just coming down for, you know, for he just wanted to be remembered at the end of the day because he had his whole life taken away from him. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it right now as I'm talking, and it's just, I'm getting goosebumps. It's just amazing.
Like Carl that, Lumley's the actor.
I just love that Marvel. I'm shocked that Marvel, that comic book movies can bring this type of emotion. That's just amazing. Think about where we came from.
I had a realization. Carl Lumley, isn't that the guy that was on Alias with Jennifer Garner?
Yes,
as her partner. It's. Mm-hmm. I dawned on me in this episode. That's who it was.
Apparently, he was also Martian Manhunter's dad on Supergirl. Was that a thing?
I think that makes sense. Yeah.
I haven't watched that, but that's what Wikipedia is telling me.
I loved him on Alias, so absolutely love that show.
He was also in Zoo, which was, that first season was okay. But after that.
Voice of Martian Manhunter on Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, look at that.
Hmm. So he's got big geek pedigree here, comics pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, but we're not done. There's actually a mid-credit scene, I want to say. Sharon testifies in front of the U.S. Intelligence Committee. He offers her senator, bad guy, whatever you want to call him, offers her a full pardon and a position in her old division. Sharon accepts, and the senator welcomes her home. Outside, she makes a call and says that they'll soon have full access to government secrets and prototypes. And that's kind of where we go. So, Sean, what do you think of this mid-credit scene and where it may lead?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that the end scene also showed Falcon and Winter Soldier logo going to Captain America.
Yes,
Soldier. That's true. So mm-hmm. I thought that was a nice twist. Yeah, I think this wasn't a shocking one to me. But I also think it does lead credibility to maybe the Skrull theory that now they have access to all this information now that she's in. My first question was, what exactly is she the agent of? Welcome back, agent. Well, where are you welcoming back to? Because you're not the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. What are you the agent of? Like that, I guess
I think she was CIA.
All right. Well, you can call it whatever you want. She's an agent something. But I think
agent of my bedroom.
Well, I think I said agent of my testicles in the chat. Something like that. But, anyway, sorry, we're towards the end, Andy. So I feel like we're in After Dark at this point. So I guess for me is if she is a Skrull, I can't imagine she's picking up a regular cell phone and calling another Skrull on the phone and saying, "Hey, look, we got like high tech shit now." So I don't know. I don't know where this is going to lead. Clearly, there's ulterior motives there, regardless if it's Sharon, not Sharon. But not a surprise mid-credit scene per se. More of probably what I expected more than a surprise.
All right. Scott?
Yeah, I'm glad Sean brought up like the title screen because that's just like puts the stamp right there even more that it's, you know, that it's Captain America. But yeah, the final credit scene, I think it's going to be the secret invasion. So, which I told these guys this on the Marvel app. I have the Marvel Unlimited app. I'm going to read the whole Secret Invasion. They have the whole story. It's 93 comics to get the full fucking story.
Happy reading.
Could you like this? Like, I'm going off on a slightly rant here. This is why younger generation is like, how do I get into comics? Well, you have to buy almost 100 comics to get the whole fucking story.
Well, I actually have the trade of just the miniseries. So,
yeah, that's why I was like, do I want to read that? I was like, no, I kind of want to read the whole story. And I clicked on it. I was like, oh my God, 93. But it like it's just like an issue that is with comics. But now with the streaming apps, they're easier to do.
They also like to have it both ways, where they have the central miniseries of the thing, whether it's Civil War, whether it's Secret Invasion, whether it's World War Hulk. And they tell you, it'll be like 7 issues, right? And they tell you, oh, well, if you read this, then that's the story. You'll get the whole story, which, number one, is not true. But then they don't tell you which ancillary titles are actually really the important ones. They're like, well, you just get more of a rich, more of a comprehensive picture if you follow the tie-ins. But we're not going to actually tell you which tie-ins are more important than others, so you better just get them all. Like, some of them are completely throwaway, completely disposable.
Well, it was just to sell comics. It was to sell their books.
Yeah, which I get, but it definitely there's an excess to it, right? Where it's like, just You know, if you want this thing to be 30 issues, fine. Just say it's 30 issues. Don't tell me it's 93 issues, but only 7 of them really count when that's not true. And also, it's also too sprawling. It's like they went way crazy with the crossovers in the early 2000s. Like,
oh, in the 90s, too.
Well, the 90s, though, was they were actually more restrained in the 90s.
The X-Men had a ton of shit.
Yeah, but you didn't have 93 issues.
No, 93 is huge. Absolutely.
You would have maybe 20-something at most.
Yeah, I was trying to think.
Still like, a lot of comics.
Like, but Secret Wars 2 had a lot of crossovers, and that terrible.
Oh, God. But that still would not have been
93, no.
No, it would have been like, what, 40? Which, again, I'm not saying 20 comics, 40 comics isn't a lot, but it isn't fucking 100 comics.
No. Absolutely not.
God bless you, Scott. I don't even think I've read every issue. I don't know. It depends on what I was actually reading at the time.
I mean, Scott, I didn't read every issue, and the trade that I have sums it up nicely for me. I don't feel the need to read all 93.
Well, he wants to get bumped up from Hick to comic nerd by the time we get
See, Andy knows me too well. That's exactly what it is.
Look at him. He thinks he was right about Sharon Carter, and now he's hot shit and wants to be a comic nerd.
That and Civil War are probably the most egregious in terms of just number, sheer volume of comic. I don't even think World War Hulk was that bad.
No, it wasn't.
I'm certain House of M was not. I don't know. House of M was kind of up there with a lot of miniseries. Anyway.
So what are your thoughts on the mid-credit scene?
Yeah.
Sorry, we went off on a tangent. My bad,
Andy. Andy's like, hey, fucker, what do you think? No.
Getting back to the actual topic.
Actually, what we're here to talk about.
Yeah. Okay, so we got a mid-credit scene in WandaVision, which was a Skrull reveal, okay? Which seems to be threading the needle for Secret Invasion, hence diversion, talking about Secret Invasion, the comic. And here we have a mid-credit scene, something involving Sharon. She's getting a pardon. She seems to be amassing some power, in fact, getting access to some resources. Be a little redundant to do another Skrull reveal with her, so we're not going to do that. But still doesn't mean she isn't a Skrull. Still doesn't mean this isn't some kind of setup, some kind of tie-in to Secret Invasion. I'm just wondering if all of these shows, at least this first round of shows that we're getting, are going to have these kind of mid-credit scenes, and they're all going to be setups for Secret Invasion.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
It could be its own thing.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Tim. Like, maybe this is what all the Disney shows are going to thread to, maybe.
Like, what is Loki going to do? Maybe that's where I'll be convinced one way or another. Like, if Loki has a weird sort of mid-credit scene that seems disconnected from the show itself, I'll be like, it might be a Secret Invasion setup. Then I think we might be building towards something. But I don't know. Maybe she's going to be rebuilding S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Agent Carter, what did they say, prototypes or something?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Prototypes.
What kind of prototypes?
Secrets.
Secrets. I think they're going to be reconstituting S.H.I.E.L.D. with her in the driver's seat.
Oh, that's good. Nice little change of pace, too. And, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us to, I have two more things to ask you guys. One, where are we going with what's next for this storyline? Like, when will we see Cap, Bucky, Sharon, anybody, Val, U.S. agent, where are we going to see them next? And then we'll talk about what our thoughts are for the next series after that. So we'll start with Scott.
Well, spoiler alert. Friday afternoon, they announced Captain America 4 as a movie. So that's where I think we'll see Captain America again, obviously. Hopefully Bucky shows up as well. I really hope, I know a lot of people are pushing for Chris Evans to return. I'm hoping he doesn't return personally. I mean, he can return later down the line, but I want Sam Wilson's Captain America to stand on his own. So that's where I think. And then I think hopefully if the movie does well, we either get Captain America 5 or a season 2. And then for Val, you know, there's been rumors that she shows up in Black Widow. So maybe we see her this summer talking with Taskmaster. Yeah. Because he's the villain for that. For Walker, you know, I'm not sure, but as Sean, I think it was Sean that said that, my apologies. I do think the TV, all the TV shows outside of Loki, their big quote-unquote Avengers Endgame is going to be Secret Invasion. That's where I think it's all leading to, all the TV shows are leading to. Starting with this one, you can't really count WandaVision because she bleeds into... Outside the post-credit scene, she bleeds into Doctor Strange too. But I think our end goal is going to be Secret Invasion.
Did they announce when or what when this next Captain America is coming out? Because we don't know where it's going to slot in.
No, they did. They just announced that the same people that did this show are writing a movie. Yeah.
So it could be a while. Yeah, and you were right. She was. They said Val was supposed to debut in Black Widow. Because this was supposed to come out, I believe, before Black Widow was supposed to come out before this, and this was supposed to come out before WandaVision. We're all messed up. Tim, what do you think we're going to see a lot of these characters?
Like I said, I have a hunch that the shows are largely going to be building towards Secret Invasion if there's not an obvious, you know, movie tie-in, the way that they kind of already announced that with WandaVision. Feeding right into Doctor Strange 2. So it's kind of weird that Loki's going to be next. I that feels more standalone to me than anything. Mm-hmm. Like, how is that going to... And it's already been... It already had a season 2 announced. So, like, I almost wonder if Loki's going to exist in its own world. And not really interact.
Remember,
so much.
He is a time displaced Loki. He's not.
He's a time displaced Loki. And I mean, is that the same thing as a multiversal variant? I mean, that's where you get into weird questions of alternate timelines versus alternate dimensions. Are they the same thing?
And I've gone cross-eyed.
Yes, yes. And I mean, I wonder if the show is going to like deal with and delve into some of those questions. I'd be into that. I think it's kind of cool. But as far as these characters, yeah, I think our next best bet is going to be like a Captain America a sequel, and you know, we'll pull up with everybody there. And certainly, I mean, is there going to be a Walker cameo? Is there going to be a Val cameo and Black Widow? That'd be cool. I would welcome it. But again, that movie itself is a flashback, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. Maybe we're going to be following like a mid-credit scene out of Black Widow that's in the present day continuing.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to happen there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Sean?
Yeah, I feel like they've had enough time and delays in Black Widow. They've gone back and maybe added some stuff like a mid-credit scene or something like that. Right. So I'm sure something's in there to kind of tie it all together. They probably did it in mid-credits. I actually think Captain America 4 was announced, but I think that's going to play out after Secret Invasion plays out, because the Secret Invasion is going to be done before that movie's made. So I think the characters we see in this show, I think we're going to see them in Secret Invasion. I think we'll see Captain Marvel in Secret Invasion. I think it's all leading to, like you said, it's leading to that TV show. I 100% think we're going to see Falcon and everybody back in that when that show comes out. I think that's going to be like, if you look at the Netflix shows where they did all their individual shows and then they did Defenders, I think that's what they're going to do with these Marvel shows, and it's going to be Secret Invasion.
Yeah, because I totally forget the order, because we still have like She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, Moon Knight.
So I think it's all going to play out for that. Mm-hmm. and it's all going to be like the Endgame, kind of like the Defenders was for the Netflix shows. And let's see, what else?
We don't have a release date for Secret Invasion yet, right?
No.
No.
I thought it was 2022.
It says filming expected to begin late 2021. So
I would say 2022, maybe early 2023, which would probably be done before we got Captain America 4, I would imagine.
You would think, unless they purposely hold off on it. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But I'm with Tim. I also do think that Loki will be a standalone show. I don't think it'll have anything to do with anything what we're seeing in these other shows. I don't.
Like a bunch of side stories, basically.
Well, I think it's going to be a very niche time-displaced Loki and doing different things versus being tied into the current going-ons of what's happening in the Marvel. I think it's going to be more of a individual-centric show and not really play into too much narrative beyond itself. But I could be wrong.
All right. So, yeah, like I was going to say, Tim, any last thoughts on Loki, on what we could see next?
No, I think I've said my piece here.
Sean?
Yeah, same thing. I'm with Tim on Loki.
And Scott, anything else to add?
I just agree with those guys.
All right, well, so that's going to wrap up this version of Pop Goes to the Couch. We will be back in June for Loki, although we don't know. We're going to evaluate other series that we may want to cover on this, which is the next one, I believe, coming out in a week or two, is Jupiter Rising. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
I believe. On Netflix. So we will see. Maybe we'll be back. Maybe we'll do a one-off. Who knows? But if not, we will see you in June with Loki. So before we go, though, since we're ending a series, let's give plugs and where else you could be found on various pods and the social medias. We will start with you, Sean.
All right. You can find me on NWA, at NWA Crack and Roll on Twitter. Obviously, we have a new Twitter for the Pop Feed, but I'll let Andy talk about that. You can find me with Scott on Battlestar in the 25th Century here on the Pop Feed as well, where we live watch Battlestar and Buck Rogers. That's a lot of fun. The wrestling feed, you can find me on Chicken Salad, Highway to the Impact Zone, and NWA Crock and Roll. So that's where you can find me.
All right. Scott.
Yeah, as Sean said, with Buck Rogers and Battlestar on 25th Century, find me on that. You can find me on Blockbuster Rewind. Our most recent one just dropped a Major League. And I can be found on Twitter at Scott_Shiflett.
All right. And Tim.
As my headphones die. for more MCU content from me, I am part of a show called The Journey Through Infinity that is covering chronologically all the films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And our most recent installment of that show we just recorded was for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So that's with myself, with Jennifer Smith, with Scott Criscolo, and JT Rosero. And that is on the Jenny Position sister podcast network. So look for that on the Jenny Position, along with a lot of other great content. On our other sister feed, that is Place to Be Nation Wrestling. I am part of two wrestling-centric podcasts there, those being PTB NXT with Jennifer Smith and Jacob Williams, chronologically going through weekly TV for NXT, including takeovers. And our next episode of that will, in fact, be the second takeover event, Takeover Fatal 4-Way. So that's going to be one to look forward to if you are an NXT fan on Place to Be Nation Wrestling. The other show I do with Jennifer, also with our friend Greg Phillips, is Talkin' WCW. And most recent episode of that was looking at three matches from Raven in WCW. I thought that was a real winner. We all came up with great match picks. And funnily enough, somehow, the next episode's subject will be Lex Luger, chosen by Jennifer Smith.
Outstanding.
I know. I can't believe she. I'm so proud of her. So don't have a drop date for that just yet, but we are looking forward to getting together to record it. That is Talking WCW, again, on Place B Nation Wrestling. You can follow me on social media. On Twitter, I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8.
Okay. As for me, like Sean said, we have a brand new Pop Experience Twitter. That is at Place Experience on the Twitter. So thank you very much, Sean, for getting it all set up, since I rarely go on Twitter, but I do promote the hell out of everything on Facebook. Also, on this very feed, though, we have our sister show, another version of Pop Goes to the Couch, that is the Mighty Ducks Game Changers. They just dropped the fifth episode of theirs called Cherry Picker. That is 10 episodes, so you got them for another 5 weeks to keep the their train going, so to speak. Also, for me, this week, I dropped the second episode of the Most Sensational Inspirational Celebrational Muppetational Podcast. That's myself, Miranda Berthold. We reviewed 4 episodes of The Muppet Show from season 1. Oh, so much fun to do that show. A Year in Pop came back last week, 1989. We'll be getting to 1990, probably sometime in June. And then also, Making Mount Rushmore drops every other Monday. Laugh in Theater should be coming back very soon. And yeah, and Trivia Night, PTV and Trivia Night. So this week, our final semifinal themed matchup. So we will see who our ninth person is to get into the semifinals, have a chance for the belt. Don't forget, check us out on Facebook, in the Place to Be Facebook group. Go on PlaceMation.com. And also subscribe to all the feeds. That is the Jenny Position, the North-South Connection, the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, and this very feed. Rate, review on iTunes always helps out all of us. We really appreciate it. So, I want to thank these guys for getting together and watching another series, breaking it down, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or better yet, Captain America and the Winter Soldier. For Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Keeple, I am Andy Hatherton. We'll check you out on the next series. Take care, everybody.